Welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And I think the bye week came at an absolutely perfect time for Richmond supporters. And I do think...
And podcasters.
And frankly, it does... It feels like the AFL itself is taking a bye from anything remotely resembling normal flow of the season. Like, it's just been doubling down on the stupid for the past few days, and I got to admit, I've enjoyed a bit of a break from it.
Which bit of the stupid is? Look, firstly, I hear analytically, this is a very hard Richmond team to get your head around. You know, like, if you just look at the Crows team, the team we took in against the Crows, if you're familiar with, well, just to give an average, the average age of Richmond versus the Crows, we were 23 years and 11 months, and the Crows were 26 years and 6 months. Now, for people who aren't nerdly obsessive about those stats, just to explain, Richmond was right in at the bottom end of a feasible level for a non-expansion club of how young your team will be, and the Crows were right at the top.
The Crows were well below average for that sort of age difference is a lot, and. You know, Geelong, it wasn't quite as much, but it was still a 2-year age difference. And that's a lot.
And, you know, it is a lot. And when you start, if you look at the sort of history of that, the team, you know, it's usually a 95% win rate for the team who's the older team. So all I'm saying is, like, that's hard analytically. Like, as a podcast person, you know, who... As we do, we pride on ourselves and going to the next and third, fourth layer. Like, what do you say about a game where you probably should have lost?
And what do you say? Like, it got ridiculous, I thought, for the Adelaide game, that it was just a combination of players that it's hard to imagine have ever played together, even in a preseason practice game.
Well, you know, and I think I'm getting off the point you were making, but I'm a big believer in the fact that injuries, like, some injuries matter more than others, and it's not, although there's been earnest attempts to capture injury impact, injuries are not all equal, and a lot of it's got to do with how strong you are in that position.
And how many injuries you get at a particular position.
Exactly. And so, for instance, you know, we're absolutely loaded at small forward. Other than Rioli sort of got a niggling injury, we're basically fine. And that was probably the position where we were most able to carry injuries should they happen. Like, clearly our best player in the reserves, you know, frankly, our only good player, you know, only viable senior player in the reserves is a small forward. On the other hand... Our midfield, we lost our starting ruck, who's effectively a fourth midfielder at the center square.
We've talked before about the Shadow Tigers versus the actual Tigers. Dustin Martin and Dion Prestia plus some random collection of players throughout the course of the day, which included Josh Caddy, Liam Baker, Dan Rioli, Marbio Chol, I thought Noah Bolter was fine as backup ruck, but if you backed them up against Toby Nankervis, Kane Lambert, Trent Cotchin, Jack Ross, Shane Edwards changing into the middle, I know which one I'd pick.
Exactly. And the thing was, it wasn't okay. Losing Cotchin was okay when you had Ross as a backup, but then we lost Ross too, and we lost Lambert. And we lost Nankervis, who for his flaws as a center, as a tap ruckman, is essentially a fourth midfielder once the ball hits the ground. It's a compounding of loss in the one spot, because you're basically losing all your strength in one position.
Playing four different starting ruckmen by halfway through a season is quite the achievement.
It is, and again, Gajak, like actually losing Jack was okay because we had one bit of cover there, but we only had two key backs and we've lost them both.
Yeah. In a position that we weren't deep in to begin with.
Yeah, and you know, there are some clubs who would have handled it better, but almost no club is going to handle that particularly well. Like, it's just all we're saying is that yes, we've got injuries, and yes, they're bad, but they're badly clustered.
Mm.
So I watched him as press conference. If you haven't seen it after the Adelaide game, Nick, I'm not afraid to stick in the boot and dimmer when I think you've done a bad job.
No, I think we can refer to previous episodes on this topic.
In fairness, it was a little while ago, but, you know, you can't stick the bolt. Like, I mean, you could micro disagree with the handling of some players, and I think Shai Bolton should definitely play against Adelaide, but, watch his press conference. He's completely zen, relaxed. He's... after the Adelaide game, he's saying exactly what essentially we're saying is, he didn't say this bit, but he heavily implied it, is we had no chance of winning today. It's good that some of the young players have shown something. He said we'd get 3 to 4 back next game, and we're 7-6. We're ahead of the ledger, and let's start the second half of the season. He's exactly right. You can't overanalyze this bit. Now, we get 3 to 4 back and we still keep losing, then we've got a problem.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just,
the exciting bit is that there's sort of 3 to 4 close for the Saints game, and there's another 2 or 3 guys sort of another week or two away. So it really will look like a very different team.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just really hard to sort of look at this Adelaide game, and you know, it almost feels a bit like a practice game. The loss counts and it matters. Like, every win's going to win. There is lots of universes where we don't make the final eight. But I think now realistic middle case scenario for Richmond right now is the team that play other teams don't want to play in the bottom half of the eight.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
That, you know, we've got a few good players coming back into form, and, you know, we might do some damage in the finals. You know, team, as we know, the Western Bulldogs, you can win from the bottom half of the eight. It can be done. So that scenario we're looking at, and just because of that, it's just a bit hard to get enthusiastic. Like, I thought the Adelaide game was really brave, but from an analytical perspective, it's hard to get too enthusiastic about it. What did you think?
Look, it was a frustrating game in some parts. I thought, it's hard to say we deserve to win, but I felt at times it felt like we didn't deserve to lose. But I also think, you know, normally I'm of the opinion that one or two players don't matter, but when you get players having such a dirty day that Garthwaite did, Brandon Ellis had a couple of critical errors that led to goals. Some of our goal kicking, including Tom Lynch, who, frankly, over there, I think he's got to stop sharing a water bottle with George Costagna. something has gone wrong from, you know, a guy who was a beautiful set shot at goal the last couple of weeks. We could have won. That was frustrating. Yeah, we just didn't have the personnel. Speaking of Brandon Ellis, before the Adelaide game, there was a report that all the usual suspects, Carlton, North Melbourne and St Kilda, were sniffing around him. You know, assuming his age, decent contract, most likely we get a mid-second round draft pick for Brandon Ellis. Would you take that right now?
It's a real mid-second round draft pick.
Yep. So, I think, you know, 27, 28.
I think that's about evens.
Mm.
I think he's gone because of the cap.
Yeah. And other teams being able to pay him a lot more money, because one of the
isn't that the cap?
Well, having, like, the reason why Hawthorn can go after Cornelio is that they just don't have that many young players who cost a lot to re-sign. And so when their veterans re-sign, you know, it frees up a lot of space. When you've got still lots of good players under contract and lots of other players who you want to keep, and a guy like Liam Baker's earned himself a pay rise, and Sydney Stack, my God, he's earned himself some money.
Bloody oath.
Bolter, like...
I'm looking forward to the Sydney Stack conversation.
Oh, me too. I just don't think we have the room for it, unfortunately. I'm very much talking myself into that mindset, and that horrible attempt to mark at the top of the goal square probably makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, so look, I don't know, like, and this is not, you know, Brando's one of those very divisive figures now, and, you know, friends of ours have been involved in sort of quite nasty debates on Twitter.
I've seen people at games yelling at each other over Brando.
I've you know, the anecdotal evidence is out there. Like, there are some just people who are, so we're not, and, you know, Lord knows, Nick, you know, I can develop a negative obsession with a player. I don't have a negative obsession with Brando. Like, he's not great. But, you know, even against the Crows, like you pointed out, he's a couple of critical errors. He was above average rated player for us on the AFL rankings, which is, it's not a sugar stat, it's a real stat. And, you know, every week he's amongst the highest ranked players for distance covered. And, well, he missed against Geelong, and maybe correlation isn't causation, but it's not like, you know, we sucked against Geelong. That's a bit sophisticated analysis there. So, I mean, he covers ground, and, you know, there was a moment when Connor mentioned you in the fourth when the game was still live. There was a switch on, and Connor mentioned you had the defensive job of guarding the furthest outs, which, you know, the release man on the switch, and he just didn't get there. And I just couldn't help but feeling Brandon Ellis would have. It was sort of a bit sad on Connor because, you know, I'm a fan of his, but also a sort of strength of Brandon. So I'm just – look, I think he's gone. I just don't think we can keep him for cap reasons. But I don't – and I think we're going to get relatively fair value for him. But I don't think it's neither a good thing nor a bad thing.
No, it's just – yeah, I think you're right. It's a thing.
It's a value for value. But we will miss him in 2020.
I know. Yeah, mature body, huge runner. Like, he's always in the top two of our running stats. And particularly, Kane Lambert, who hasn't got talked about much amongst our injured players, he's still in the AFL ratings team of the year. Like, that's how well he was going.
Yeah, I'm super worried about Achilles' injury. Sorry to, you know... crap injury. Maybe that's a bit influenced by the NBA finals. Let's hope he comes back soon.
Definitely. Before we, I want to talk about several of the younger players, because that's frankly the more life-affirming part of the conversation. The question has to be asked, is there a problem with our injury management?
You know, I'm going to say exactly what you would say.
Yes, no, maybe.
It's a high variance stat. If you average out the statistical output for the last 3 to 4 years, it's actually pretty good. And maybe we just had some couple of good years, and now we're just having a, you know, you go to the roulette wheel sometimes, black comes up 5 times in a row.
Yeah, I think the roulette, Some of the roulette wheel injuries are Rance, Jaden Short, Jack Ross, Jack Rewald. Soft tissue issues are always the ones for me, because they're the ones that really are often a management issue. I think part of the story as well is we've just played a lot of games of football over the last couple of years, and yeah, it's, and mostly, you know, a number of the other teams who've gone deep in the finals have also got fairly long injury lists. Like, I think there is part of the story there. I think there's been some of the tricky catches. Like, it's hard to say that we've managed Trent Cotchin well. That, you know, that he's been in and out of the side with recurring hamstrings problems. I know it's hard, but maybe with a couple of guys, we haven't got it right.
I mean, you could be right. You can make a case with Cotchin that he's just getting slightly old. Mm. And, you know, that sometimes it happens to players of his age. It is just unfortunate that it's happened to Cotchin and Lambert at the same time. The year after we got rid of Miles.
Yeah. Well, and Jack Ross.
That's crap.
Jack Ross's... I was having a look at Jack Ross's stats, and he had some really good games of football.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, we're coming back to the previous conversation, but I completely agree. But the injury management, and maybe, you know, there's a theory out there that we went hard for, you know, last year we went hard early, and this year we've paced ourselves and gone hard a bit later, and maybe that's caused more injuries. Look, I don't know, and, you know, the thing is I'm reluctant to speculate on things where I know that are high variance, and, you know, maybe Cotchin just pinged his hammy hard and it's just having trouble healing. I think it's hard for me to draw a definitive conclusion when I can't see it on the field, and I know the high variance results. So, look, there might be something to it, and if we have another crap injury year next year, I think you've got a strong case. Yeah. But, you know, we've had two superb injury years.
I know, and as you say, we've just it just keeps coming up. It felt like a joke leading up to the Adelaide game. You know, Shane Edwards, Trent Cotchin, Ivan Soldo. Like, ugh.
Well, as you know, that you know we've got another injury because you get a text message or a Twitter message from me that's just a swear word. Because I'm just so sick of it.
I know.
All right, Nick.
What have we learnt? The flip side to all the injuries is that I feel like we've learnt a bit about the younger players. Some of those lessons are the obvious ones of young players are often really inconsistent. Cough Noah Bolter. But we saw Patrick Naish. And Patrick Naish,
thank you.
Is meaningful for me. Because he's the Firth's father-son, where I remember his dad being drafted, and that makes me feel old.
Yes, and he's a boom bust high upside player. So, very interesting. From
I know he's only our second father-son pick in the last 20 years, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, isn't it? Well, what do you think? Like, obviously, couldn't have started better.
Couldn't have started better. That was a very nice finish. I thought his Geelong game was better than his Adelaide game.
Yeah, no doubt.
I thought he flashes in and out of the game. I actually thought in the start of the fourth quarter of the Crows game, he got quite busy. He's very confident in his kicking. He covers a lot of ground. He's really confident in his kicking. No, and it doesn't quite always come off, but it.
You know what he has been, Nick?
Mm-hmm.
Both games above average on our team in contributions to AFL rankings, which, sorry to keep quoting the stat, but it's basically a measure of what your disposals are doing.
Yep. Yeah, he's a definite talent, and I'll be interested to see if he stays in the team, how quickly. Like, the VFL team will do all sorts of nonsense handballs sideways and backwards to get him the ball. Yep. At the moment, he's sort of the one handballing it to Dusty because that's his place in the pecking order. But I could see him, like, he's big number meters gained. Numbers against Geelong, not as good against Adelaide, but still good. The question on his physicality, I think, still there. Like, he cracks in okay, but he's not getting much contested ball. So, yeah, he's pretty much as expected. Like, he's a talented guy, but he's not a finished product.
No, I don't think... Yeah, I think the senior run is really good for him. Mm. I'm not sure how much he has to prove in the VFL anymore. I just think the game's so different for him. Mm. There are some players where the VFL, like, you're an inside mid, you're basically bashing in, grabbing the ball, kicking it forward. It's the same at every level. Outside players, I think it's the biggest difference, because the kicking's... both the way space is created is different. There is more genuine space, but also the kicks are harder.
Mm. Yeah, there's less time. It's a tougher gig.
All right, so enough of that. I'm just transitioning before we get to Sydney Stack. We just have to recognise that Dusty was BOG, according to a lot of the ranking starter, as captain. So all hail the king.
Hats off to him.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, we expected that. All right. Enough joshing around. Sydney Stack.
Prestia's been good too. Yeah.
Actually, Nick, long-time listeners of the podcast will know that I've always compared Gold Coast Suns, Dion Prestia, with Richmond, and it's never measured up. Mm. Guess what's happened in the last few weeks?
Measuring up?
Gone past. He's Gold Coast Suns. So he's now the 49th best player in the AFL, according to the rankings. He's never been that high before, as far as I'm aware.
Do you know which first-year player is leading AFL in AFL player ratings?
Miss Sydney Stack, wouldn't it?
Yes, it is.
Smooth transition.
I loved... Look, it was quite a popular tweet, but I loved his confidence in trash-talking Eddie Betts. The audacity of him as someone who's played eight games of senior football, coming off the supplementary rookie list, to sledge Eddie Betts, you know, legend.
And just for the lessons, he told Eddie Betts that he wasn't going to kick a goal on him.
No special goals today. No special goals today. That's great. And you know that Eddie got one, yeah, in junk time.
But Nick,
that's fine.
Did you see why Eddie got that?
I did notice that Stack flew in the contest.
Because Sydney Stack, the Adelaide player was, I can't remember who it was free and was going to take an uncontested mark. And Sydney Stack went back, bravely back into a contest, left Eddie and did the right thing. It was his turn to go and created a contest where there was none, and stopped the Adelaide taking an uncontested mark. And so then Eddie Betts was free and kicked the goal. So what I'm saying is that, yes, Betts kicked the goal, but... A, you can hardly blame Sydney Stack from that part of the game, having just watched, you know, I don't think we need to name names here, but there were at least two Richmond plus 190-centimetre players who, whenever the ball was in the air near them, that the Betty Hill music was playing. And Sydney Stack just took it on himself to create a contest, did a great job, and Eddie took advantage of it, like good small forwards do, but Sydney Stack was blameless in that goal.
Mm. He's consistently brave. His runoff halfback, like on a day where I thought we were workmanlike for a lot of the performance, like we were just lacking some of that top end spark. He had a number of between him and Dusty, there were a disproportionate number of our moments of inspiration. I'm becoming more and more... I did notice his tackles get shrugged occasionally, which is part of him needing to put on a bit more weight to play in midfield. But also, I'm just more and more impressed about his ability in traffic. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think you and every other Richmond supporter.
Yeah. non-controversial opinions.
Now, I want to talk about Jack Graham.
Who appears on a list of top 30 players in the AFL who've improved their AFL ranking the most in the past month?
Normally know this. Who is it?
Jack Higgins.
Yeah, which is... I have seen that, and which is weird, because anyone who's watched Roy Richmond games doesn't think he's playing that well.
No, definitely not. I thought he's been fumbly and a bit out of
form. Yeah, very, very noticeably so.
Yeah, look, he's still running to good spots. Like, that is when you know, if you have to say what Jack Higgins' skills are, a big work rate and getting to the right spot are sort of two. And quick thinking, sort of his three biggest skills. But I think he's fumbly and a bit out of confidence. But the AFL player ratings still like him. It's weird.
Yeah, 14 possessions, no clearances, not particularly high. Oh, no, sorry, 7 tackles. That's probably why.
Yeah, he's still working hard. And you can't drop him in with anywhere close, I think, with the current configuration of the team. But, yeah, if you're finding 6 or 7 guys to drop over the next month, which we may have to do... Yeah, maybe a week or two in the reserves should do him some good.
So Jack Higgins, that is. Jack Graham. Mm. I mean, 23 touches just for stars and a couple of nice little hand passes. Ridiculous amount of pressure acts. It's like his brother is the Richmond's pressure act statistician. Because he just, like, his numbers are amazing. And you know what? I can't always see it on the screen. Like, he's such an incredible outlier. You just think that every contest you'd expect Jack Graham to be cracking in. But I don't know, somehow. So I don't know if he's gaming the system or what he's doing. But
he does get a lot of tackles just as people are getting the ball away.
Yeah, and he did have 11 tackles.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like there's not other confirming metrics. But, he's sort of, remains interesting. Remains quite interesting. Unique.
A team full of Jack Grahams gets beaten. His disposal's pretty frustrating at times, I thought. But as you say, he's worked hard, he's covered a lot of ground, and loads of pressure. So there's something to work with.
Great last quarter, and according to my beloved AFL rankings, was our fourth best player.
Yeah, weird. Josh Caddy is a bit out of form.
Yeah, it's been coming for a while, hasn't it?
Weirdly so, in that his stats for this year are identical to last year, except... He's not taking as many contested marks, and he's...
Which kind of matters.
Which does matter, yeah. When you're not winning a ton of ball, like, he's 17 disposals a game, and his goal kicking's regressed because, you know, he can't always be the best kick for goal in AFL history. But, yeah, I was surprised that, you know, his aggregate stats just look a lot like they did last year. Yeah, except...
Actually, so does his AFL ranking.
Yeah, I know.
But everyone who watches games would agree with you.
Look, he has spent a bit more time in midfield, and he spent some time as a tagger against Geelong, which I was okay about.
The irony is that of his last four seasons, clearly his worst was 2017.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah, but he produced what it mattered.
I don't think... Yeah, I mean, Marbia Chol is our fourth string ruckman, and I think he looked like... Despite he flashed in marking contests, I thought he was a bit hopeless as in ruck contests.
Yeah, and he stops jumping late. I don't know.
He just doesn't time it. He doesn't have a ruckman's instinct of when to jump for the ball, which is a shame because he's 200 centimetres and he jumps up jumps like crazy.
It's
really frustrating.
Like, there's so much there,
mm.
but I'm not sure what's there as an AFL player.
No, I think, yeah, I just think Callum Coleman-Jones is so much closer to being a functional version of that forward ruck role than Mabi Acholl is in his fourth season. Mm.
Yeah. I just think if life was judged by highlight reels, if football output was judged by highlight reels, then Mabi Acholl would be our starting ruck. It's not.
He pumps. I thought Ivy was good against Geelong.
Yeah.
I was worried there was an early contest where Stanley ran away from him, but I thought he controlled the contest a lot of the time.
All right, Nick. I'm pretty much out of analysis for the Geelong game, Geelong and Adelaide game. I did want to just make a point about when I was talking before about what's wrong, what's right about Richmond and the season thus far. Like, if you compare 2018 to 2019, we are rubbish at disposal differential. Like, we are clearly the worst in the AFL. But we were crap last year. We just weren't... We were just 15th in the AFL.
We weren't quite this crap.
We're slightly less than... I think we're about minus 18 and net we're minus 40. So we're in some ways twice as bad, but it's not like it's been a strength. We're still net positive on inside 50s, which is not surprising because we have a winning record. But we were second in 2018. We're actually tackling better in 2019, which you'd kind of expect because we don't have the ball.
We were plus 26 for tackles. We had 88. We had 88 tackles against the Cats, which was 26 above our normal amount.
Our clearance has been a train wreck in both years, so I'm not sure you can put it to that. And our contested possessions are now terrible, and they used to be just bad. And Dimmer made the point that contested possessions after the clearance are much more important than ones before it. Interesting use of statistics there. It's funny, actually, when you hear Dimmer talk, when he's just speaking off the cuff in coaching speak, he still uses base contested possession inside 50 stats quite often. When, you know, like, you sort of hear sometimes that these stats are passe and they don't really tell you anything anymore, but Dimmer still uses them like they mean something to him. He's obviously quite stat literate. I'm saying this to say that these stats are obviously still relevant. I'm not saying this as criticism of Dimmer. And our contested possessions are now terrible. Well, they just used to be sort of bad.
They were bad, yeah.
Yeah, but the huge difference was, really, our intercept possessions have just collapsed. We used to be sixth. We're still sixth in the AFL on a differential basis, but we used to be first by a mile.
Yeah, we were first by a mile, which is... Yeah, it's partly the Alex Rant story, but yeah, there's been the continuity of the defence, which was such a strength,
exactly,
hasn't been there all year. I think the forward 50 pressure's been a bit on and off compared to last year. Yeah, the midfield's suffered from injuries. Yeah, I said at the start it's been kind of exhausting, but just the ups and downs. Like, we haven't known what we're going to get week to week at all, or even in the course of a game. You know, the first quarter of the Geelong match was really good, and then they couldn't...
First quarter of the Adelaide match was really good.
And then they could not miss in the second quarter. That was terrible. So, one positive... definite positive from the season has been how, you know, a significant number of players have transitioned from from the VFL, and it is remarkable that right now the VFL team is on top of the ladder. The VFL W team is second on the ladder and unbeaten. Like, it feels like the player development pathway for all the chaos has held up under the stress.
Oh, I think that's completely uncontroversial. Clearly it's the case.
It doesn't make it, particularly in the case of the VFL, it doesn't make it any less remarkable. And actually it is, it's not a bad effort for the VFLW team as well, when right now I think we still have fewer signed AFLW players than any other team because of sort of the Stars and Scrubs approach that they've taken. But we've still only got 10 players, whereas other teams have...
I think it's 11 now.
Might be. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, other teams have 20, 25 under contract. But...
Yeah, that's a fair point.
You know, the VFL team's still been winning games with... You know, it's... You know, you go into a season with a best 22 and a second 22, and... You know, of our best team in the VFL, maybe there's only 7 or 8 guys. So they've been bringing first year players in. They're going reasonably well. Fraser Turner's made a good transition to senior football. Mav Weller's and Townsend, sort of some veteran depth. Riley Collier Dawkins a bit up and down, although apparently battled through a bout of tonsillitis a couple of weeks ago, and played a very good game against Coburg.
Yeah, I wouldn't have put it so much as up and down as has been middling and then had a semi-decent game.
Oh, look, he wasn't very good the week before. Look, he was sort of at a certain standard, below the standard, yeah, and has it. And it's interesting that I don't. He still always pops on the VFL highlights. Like, he's just a big talented athlete who impacts the contest. And yeah, he's
sure not confusing him with Jake Arts.
No, not so much with the stubby VFL player.
Sorry, that was a cheap shot.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think
he leaps off the screen.
But you know, the highlight was obviously Shy.
Shy Bolton, like that was a spectacular game. What, 36 disposals, 11 tackles, 9 clearances, like a goal, monster numbers.
Yeah, and you know, when I do my grumpy old man thing and say when someone gets 28 possessions, big deal in the VFL. Yep, this is it. You know, this is what good AFL listed players do. They do stuff like this. And you know, like I said before, I thought he should have played against Adelaide.
Yeah, he was great.
And I reckon he's straight back in.
Mm. Yeah, there's been a bit of media speculation around Dan Butler, being targeted, and yeah, and again, if you're making really tough decisions, because Shy Bolton's also apparently attracted a bit of interest, and yeah, maybe if
you keep one but not both,
you keep one but not both, yeah. Bolton is so tantalising when he's on.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But regular listeners to the podcast will know that the advanced metrics love Dan Butler when he was in form.
Yes, they do.
Now I know there's issues with Dan Butler, he's not exactly a combine harvester threshing machine when at the contest, but he does have
his moments. Yeah,
he does. He's played a lot of good footy for Richmond. Maybe probably not recognised how good it was.
No, that's true. Yeah, it's easy to get lost in how shiny and flashy Shai Bolton can be. Like the
and Daniel Rioli. We all love Daniel Rioli, but you know, I think relative to what they actually do, Dan Butler is underrated, and Rioli's probably slightly overrated, as much as it hurts me to say.
Yeah, he's had spectacular games in the finals.
Which always helps with it. Yeah, he's had big moments, which that's what people will remember. But
yep. Shai Bolton would have blown up the AFL ratings if they applied it to the VFL last weekend. Look, he's made an AFL ratings team of the week after his game against Freo. There's so much upside. It's incredible.
The AFL ratings, I swear, they were nothing before we started mentioning it on the podcast every week. Other people, it's getting used more and more amongst Richmond fans. Anyway.
Speaking of the VFLW team, like their good form resulted in Tom Hunter being named AFLW coach, which, you know, kind of seems obvious when they're going so well, but he's a senior coach at 28, which is a pretty good effort.
Yeah. So as you know, Nick, I coached under 18s when I was at university. And I was 21 coaching under 18s, and that season went all right. So look, who am I to criticise? You know, one of my bugbears is teams that actually this podcast should just be renamed Andy's Pet Hates.
We haven't mentioned Steve Morris yet.
I've implied it a couple of times. I hate football teams just doing it because it's a safe, obvious decision. I think they do that all the time, particularly in NFL, but I think they do it in AFL too. I mean, how often do people become senior coaching candidates because they were good players? I just think there's a real lack of thinking about this. And a kid, like, he's a really unobvious choice. So I just look at him and think he must be good. You know, he's going to have problems. Like, he's going to have maybe one day play. He might have players older than him. He might struggle to maintain discipline. But
He's got players 6 years older than him.
I like the unconventional thinking behind it.
Well, in some ways, I really like him as a choice because He's got a playing background. You know, he was a rookie draft pick by Collingwood. Injury finished his career early, so he sort of, you know, he's experienced highs and lows. He's got a teaching background, which I think is really good in a team where, you know, you are bringing some people in who've got not that much background in the game. Our ruckman on the weekend was Gabby Seymour, who you Google her name, and in 2017 she was a top level volleyball player.
Nick, that is fantastic. That I mean, you're Googling the name of essentially our VFL ruckman, AFLW ruckman.
She's our backup.
Exactly.
It's kind of because we've got to fill out the team. So I've been doing a bit of research trying to work out which ones are going to get picked up. But she's got no football background except for the last 12 months, and she had her first VFLW game and was really good. That is not an easy thing to coach when you're bringing in elite athletes from other sports and trying to teach them a system and build a culture of a team, you know, and maybe there's going to be a fair bit of turnover. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I agree.
The one thing I would take away from the AFL's often glaring incompetence over the past couple of weeks, if not months, how long are we going to keep Benny Gale for?
Well, the rumor is, I mean, really good question. The current rumor as of today is we keep him next season and then he's gone, which I can live with. I know this is a dark path and there are many different views on this, but the thing about the fan behaviour and everything else on it, now I could talk about this for half an hour by itself, but there's just one little aspect of it that I wanted to pick out. they named their sort of the extra high goons that they hired their behavioral awareness officers.
Yeah.
Like, it's so Orwellian. Like, I mean, are these, like, could they, it's like they're parodying themselves in the AFL being 1984. You know, I'm not one of these people who says the AFL is like some evil dark institute, or, you know, there have been people posting Nazi memes about the AFL.
Yeah, all of which is unfair. The charge of, do they run the business like a, you know, they're a decent sized business. You know, turnovers in the hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Are they coherent and consistent in their public messaging? Is there a sign of clear, deliberate strategy as well as ability to respond to crisis? And, you know, it's that they lurch from, you know, at the start of the year, there was a number of instances of videos of punch-ups in the stands, and then they, you know, they lurch to an overcorrection and they deny the overcorrection, and they're just not able to find a sweet spot in all the chaos. And look, there's so many people who've got a vested interest in playing up the chaos, but it's just the failure to communicate a clear, consistent message drives me nuts in ways that I can't talk about.
The Herald Sun is simultaneously running running very strong on the line that the AFL's been over-policing fans, while every time there's a brawl in the football, they'll publish that on the front
crisis,
page.
Crisis.
So, yeah, it's difficult. And, you know, the AFL has done very well, and still one of the great things about the AFL is ordinary people can afford to buy those tickets. Yeah. And there are people, you know, I know Collingwood fans, and that they love Collingwood, but Joffa's a really simple guy. They say that, you know, he posts on Big Footy apparently. And they say, I don't read his posts because he's got no insight. He's just not a very bright guy. You know, he loves his club, but he just, you know, it's a very simplistic. So, you know, these are these people and they love their clubs and so much of their identity is tied into it. And they're not always going to behave perfectly in what's considered acceptable standard by the Gil McLaughlins of the world. But there's a line between what's completely unacceptable, like racist behavior and fighting, and what's just someone being a bit of a wanker, but is, you know, there are lots of wankers in the world.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. This is a. I said I wouldn't get into it, and I completely agree with your point that I just think the AFL wants to be all things to all people, but, you know, putting train goons in behavioral awareness jackets, then denying that you're having a crackdown before perhaps checking with the stadiums, who I'm sure talk to the AFL about their behaviour management, strategies.
At the AFL-owned stadium.
Exactly.
Anyway. Look, the AFL has got a bit of, having followed the A-League for a long time, and the police presence at A-League games is palpably, even at Melbourne City games, which, you know,
there's no one there. For people who don't follow A, like, yeah.
Whereas, like, there are, like, the old Subiaco really did have genuine issues with, you know, players could virtually reach into the opposition dugout, like the the dugout fans. Like, some of these. And when you step back and look at the broader context, when something was going around on social media today of the most popular clubs in Australia of any code, the AFL just dominates that list. It's got a great big TV rights deal. You know, it's expanded into new markets. AFLW has been fantastic for grassroots football. Like, when if they could manage a coherent message and a coherent strategy, you know, we'd be talking about positives rather than.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is the hubris that
hubris. Yeah,
yeah. Part of this is, in fact, a lot of it is just social change, and the AFL's hitting a couple of cultural sweet spots that other professional sports don't. But they think it's all because of the reforms they implemented after their 2-week junket to the Super Bowl. You know, when it's clearly they don't actually get a lot of what's happening in American sport. And by the way, America is the richest country on earth. NFL is the number one sport. And a lot of those professional teams are playing their monopoly markets of 3 million people. Of course they're going to be rich as hell. Like, actually, the AFL needs to be better than the NFL in managing its fans. And it can't copy everything because it's not the same demographics. Like, it's not the one. It might not be the 1%ers in NFL games, but it's pretty much the 10%ers. And the, you know what? AFL has the 80%ers.
Yeah, I know. Part of sustaining success is knowing when you've been lucky and when you've been good.
Nick, this has transitioned long about 10 minutes ago from being a podcast to us just talking like we do at the pub, so I think it's time to wrap up the podcast.
Yeah. Okay. So, Will, to wrap this up, part of what happens when coaches get sacked, sometimes it feels unfair, but the narrative has just unraveled so much that your position becomes untenable. And, yeah, I think... You know, they're talking the end of next year. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens faster than that. And I'll be sad to see Benny go if it happens. Yeah, but I'm also expecting, you know, priority picks, 22 games a year at the MCG, you know, stuff like that.
Nick, there is a world where I don the tinfoil hat over the... let's just say if there's any redevelopment plan at Punt Road, that they need to have good community consultation. But that's an issue for a future podcast.
Right. This is possibly our longest show ever.
Well, in fairness, we did promise an early show straight after the Adelaide game. We didn't deliver, so we're overcompensating with lots of A-grade, half-assed opinions.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tigers.
Martin, 3 votes.